the box mill out on Hopkinton Road. That was a long time ago, and I don't know if it had any relationship to his or not. He made the boxes in his factory then.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I can remember going down there. My grandfather worked there. Grandfather Holden worked there at one time. And going in there and smelling the nice clean sawdust and all,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And the sound of the planers and the saws running and the joiners. It was a very pleasant place to be. And of course, a small boy was held right back by the door. You could look, but not move around.
No.
So many tools.
Dangerous, too, yeah. For a young boy, yeah. No, that's a lovely, lovely odor. It really is. The wood chips and the... I can remember going with my grandfather, and we would get what he called splints, and that was when they shaved off the side, and you'd use that for kindling to start the fire.
Yeah, I can remember.
And I had to stay in the horse and wagon. I couldn't go
in the horse and wagon.
Oh, sure.
Now this was.
This was in Canada. This was my grandfather had a farm. Yeah. And so I remember all of these churning the butter and separating the milk and.
Yeah.
And all of that, which I wish more of our young people could have access to.
Mm, yes, yes.
You know, they look at everything packaged, Bell.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't know the continuity or where it came from.
Yeah. And they don't know what a cow looks like, really.
No.
You know, they see pictures.
Just pictures. I know I was coming down Fisher Street yesterday, and right there on the corner of Fisher and Maynard, there were two of those lovely brown cows.
Yeah, Pinky Bowman's.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I wanted to stop and take a picture.
Yeah, I think they're Guernseys.
Yeah, they looked like they were to me.
And those, he's remarkable, isn't he? This fellow was handicapped, severely handicapped, and they cut up these great tree trunks and split the wood. And all that. Did you notice those?
Oh, yes, they're huge.
Yeah, I think when anybody's clearing anything, they take you to the Mike Barbarians or down to Pinky Bowman's.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but the town certainly has changed. We no longer have a 5 and 10. We no longer have an A&P where you could go in and they'd slice you a piece of swordfish and grind you your coffee for you.
Or George Kane cut you out a piece of chuck.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And remember, the First National was right on the corner of there, and I used to shop in there.
And Mr. Forbes, Curtis Forbes, went over there. Mm-hmm. He pretty much ran that meat department for many years after they opened. Yeah.
And I remember going into Haberay's, the drugstore, when
which
it was
used to be Buxton's.
Yeah, and having a root beer.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Yes. And of course, Blankenship's, we still go to Golden's.
Yep, yep.
And they still have the kinds of things that, you know, the Snuggies to keep you warm and the cotton underwear. And because now, of course, that's.
And Red Thread.
And Red Thread.
Yeah,
I know. They took that part, you know, the sewing and the fabric out. But, well, when you were a young boy and going to school and all, you worked on the farm with your father.
Yeah.
And then. You did your chores in the morning or in the afternoon?
Well, we
got back from school, or?
Well, we always had about three or four cows, one or two milking, and one or two young stock coming along.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a pair of horses, always a pair of horses. Yeah, there were chores to do. You feed the cows and milk the cows.
Mm-hmm.
And us three brothers took turns milking. Yeah.
Now, who you? I know Ra, Clarence is your brother, and then you have a
Richard. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we took turns milking and putting down the hay and feeding. Well, we fed quite a lot of apple pumice because we had the cider mill.
Mm-hmm. And these, did you have that right on Chestnut Street?
In the barn, Chestnut Street there.
Mm-hmm.
The barn which came down in the tornado of 53.
Yes.
Yeah, we did chores before we went to school. And usually walked to school.
Where did you go to school now?
Well, all the three schools.
All the three schools.
All here in town. And carried our lunches. And then came back after school and worked on the farm Saturdays and Sundays. And chores at night. Go out to the barn with a lantern. We didn't get electricity on Chestnut Street until 36.
Oh.
And so everything was kerosene. And we'd go out to the barn at night and hang the lantern up on a safe place and get up in the haymow, push the hay down through a trapdoor into the livestock down below.
Yeah, yeah.
And then take the lantern and go downstairs. And while one of us fed, spread out the apple pumice and the grain and the hay and the water, the other party milked. And then we go back up to the house, and usually this was done before supper. And mother would have supper ready when we got back in. And the milk was set out in big pans and allowed the cream to rise to the top. And then using a skimmer, which was sort of like a large clamshell, would skim the cream off, and quite a lot of the milk would then went back to the chickens or the pigs. After it was soured, some of it went into cottage cheese.
Did you have a separator? A milk separator?
Never had a separator, no. No, those are quite expensive.
Are they really?
No, yeah.
Oh, I didn't and know. So my grandfather had one. So.
They were fiendish to clean.
Oh, I know that. Yeah, with boiling water.
Series of discs. And, you know. And also, it took quite a lot of arm power to turn them, too.
Tell me about it. I know. Although we always had, my grandfather usually had a couple of hired hands around. But even so, and the skim milk we used and for the slops for the pigs.
Oh, Marcy, what kind of pork you can grow with skim milk.
I know. Yum.
Then we raised eggs. Some of these went to the stores and trade. And when we bought chickens, we started a brooder house with 200 or so chicks, day-old chicks. And as they, this had a coal stove in the middle, which had to be tended morning and night. It's for a more or less automatic type of stove. It pretty much ran itself once you got it adjusted. And this kept the chicks warm, and as the chicks got bigger, you moved the shields farther out from the stove, and finally you did away with them entirely and shut the stove down. Then you separated your pullets and your roosters, and you fattened your roosters up some, and then dressed these off the boilers. And these went to the markets here.
Markets here? You didn't ship them anywhere else?
No, just locally, you know.
Well, my grandmother had went... Every once in a while, she'd have a little brooder hen that wouldn't sit and wouldn't stay with her chicks afterwards. So she used to tie one leg, and then they had a doghouse. And she'd tie her to the entrance to the doghouse and have the nest in there, and the hen couldn't go anywhere, you know.
Push her feet out. Well, that was an interesting arrangement.
Yes. And did she ever squawk? Oh, my.
She get used to it?
Yeah, and then she'd sit on the eggs. It was funny. I always remember that one. Funny, funny situation that was. Watch her squawking around. No, we did the same thing. We would dress the roosters and chop the heads off.
We were always, as children, we always looked forward to the time when the roosters got up to around 2 pounds, 2.5, and we'd dress off 6 or 7 to begin with, and mother would make fried chicken. And then as the broilers got bigger, it only took 2 to feed the family. They'd be up in the 3, 3.5 pound.
Did you have some sisters besides Peg?
Peg was the only sister.
Yeah.
And she had quite often the miserable job of finishing the pin feathers. After we'd pick them, slug dress them off.
Not fair.
And we usually raised a pig every year. And so this...
Slaughter it so you could have the pork?
Yeah, father very often did the slaughtering. I didn't have any part of that.
No.
I was away that day when father did the slaughtering. Dick would help him.
Would he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have to pull your pig up by his hind legs and drain the blood. And then you eviscerate them. And then you have to get them into a tub of hot water. With a 250-pound pig, that's quite a job. And you scald them, and then you pull them back out, and you use a sharp blade to cut the bristles off.
Yes, because they were bristly. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
And then, of course, the pig was cut up, and I can remember Father and Dick would eat the pig's liver while it was still warm, I thought.
Yeah.
No, I didn't like that idea.
No. But, no, and did you have a root cellar, or did you have a...
The barn cellar.
The barn cellar.
Apple cellar, and that was, we stored, oh, as many as 3,000 or 4,000 bushels of apples.
Oh, my.
And of course, it was cold and damp, and the apples kept well. So anything else went down there, two cabbages,
carrots,
turnips, yeah,
parsley.
Everything except squashes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember in our house, we had, my grandmother's house, we had a trap door, and you'd go down into the cellar where we had the butter and the cheese and, and
that'd
the cream.
That would be about 40 degrees.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Just about perfect,
yeah.
I guess, to
to
keep it. But it was an entirely different life, though. Did you feel that you had some leisure time? Did you boys have time to play, or...?
We always did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes when we were supposed to be working, Father wasn't around, you know. Yeah. And quite a lot of boys would come up to the farm.
Boys like farms.
Yeah, our friends, yeah. And very often Father would calmly accept them and put them to work along with the rest of us.
Sure.
He was very skillful at that.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was your father's first name?
Edward.
Edward.
Edward Winslow.
Edward Winslow.
Emery, yeah.
Emery.
Mm-hmm. And he started the farm. He came back from San Francisco just before the earthquake and started buying up pieces of land along Chestnut Street,
mm-hmm.
which had been in Lyman Belknap's
farm. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And Lyman was his uncle.
Uh-huh.
But Lyman had sold his land off, so Father bought it piece by piece back. Meanwhile, he was running a rendering truck, team.
What's a rendering
truck?
Well,
he picked up bones and tallow from the markets, Marlboro, Northboro, Shrewsbury, and set it up in barrels here, and they picked it up here and took it to Worcester.
Oh.
So he did that
while
he was getting his farm started. And then he had a dairy herd for a while, and I think the idea of the 14 meetings a week with his cows rather overcame him, so he started his orchard then.
Yes.
And from then on, it was orchard and only cows as incidental. So.
Yeah, just for your own consumption.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Nice to have a cow, though.
Oh, the milk. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
yes, yes.
Yeah.
I know, and I would go down there, and you know, it's not pasteurized or anything that, and it always tasted so good
for
me.
Oh, I think so. Yes.
Oh. And the butter was wonderful too.
I remember the Wilkinsons had a milking shorthorn. This was a long time ago when they first moved on to West Main. And this milking shorthorn produced nice milk. Not large quantities, but very good milk.
Mm-hmm.
And they wondered what had happened to, not Stanley, but Paul. Paul became quite ill, with symptoms of arthritis, partially paralyzed arms and hands and joints and all. And about, quite a long time, I don't know whether it was a year or more, that they studied his illness and it turned out to be underlying fever.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Which this nice shorthorn had brought in.
Well, of course.
Shorthorn,
yes.
Yeah. And so after they found out what it was, they could treat Paul and got him straightened down.
Did they have to destroy the cow?
I believe they did.
Yes,
yeah.
I would think
Yeah. And of course, that business of underlying fever, more TB than underlying fever, did terrible things to the farmers.
Yes.
I had an uncle in Vermont who had a herd of about 40 milking cows. And after the TB test, he had 5 left. And here was a man in his middle years, you know. He never recovered from
it. No, of course not.
Yeah, although they did pay a small amount of money.
But not enough
for
to
the
replace it.
No, not to replace it. No. Yeah. Life talking enough here.
Oh, no. I've enjoyed this because you remember so many things that people now... When they look at Westboro, they think electronics and microchips and, you know, all that sort of...
I can remember driving a team through Westboro and stopping here at the watering trough at School Street.
Yes.
And pulling up carefully, you had to sort of pull your horses up slightly off center, because the wagon pole, if it were on center, you know, it ran right into the watering trough. And so coming a little off center, those horses would drink there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of them has disappeared. There used to be two. There's one down in the square.
Yes. Well, we moved that one down. It was at the Dairy Queen.
Yes.
And the Historical Commission said, well, it should go back where it was.
Yes, yes.
But the other one, we have no idea what happened to it.
Probably jumped for cast iron somewhere.
Well, yes, I guess in the 40s there was a lot of that done,
because
there were two wonderful iron urns in the Memorial Cemetery on either side. Because there's a picture of them, and of course they're gone.
Yeah.
Just the base where they were is still. But you know what I do? I have a favorite game. Because I know so much about the town and the way it looked, when I drive out West Main Street, I blank out those other houses. And I just remember, you know, John Fay's and Otis Fay and, you know, Jasper Fay, all of that. And wherever I can ride around town once in a while. And I think about, because I was just doing a little, well, it's a paper. This woman was interested. They've moved in over at Yulman Farms, that new development. And they live on Thomas Newton Road.
Thomas Newton?
Yeah, Thomas Newton Road.
Now, who was he?
Well, Thomas, he was Ensign Thomas Newton. He came over from Marlborough with his daughter, with his wife, Record Ward, who was the daughter of Increase Ward. My goodness. Anyway, he was born in 1674, I think it was. And you speak of this land, well, he and Josiah Newton, he bought 107 acres from Thomas Rice, who had to have the money, you know, because he wanted to ransom his boys that the Indians had. So I made up a little story for her, and then of course the Blue Anchor Tavern was there, and that was run by the Newtons. And by
well, that's
children.
Why it's called Newton Hill down there.
Yes,
of course.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, I can envision what your farm was like.
Yeah.
Because I have all these, well, of course, Dr. Reed. You remember Dr. Reed?
Yes.
God bless him.
Yes.
And we have hundreds and hundreds of things in here, Belle, that he talks. I don't think all he ever did was when he sat waiting for a cow to be a calf.
I wondered if he ever did actually practice much medicine.
I don't know, because he spent all his time doing genealogy.
Yeah.
And describing what the farms were like and who lived on them and
how many
siblings and children they had. But you remember him.
Oh, yes. Yep. He wore rather thick glasses and sort of rambled around in his conversation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And rode a horse.
Yeah.
Big black horse.
Yeah.
I have a picture of him.
No, that was before my time.
The black horse was before your time.
Yeah.
But you still now on your farm, what do you have on your own farm now? You have some sheep?
Well, we've kept all the land, all except a small piece of it. So we own much of the land from Jennings Road to Ruggles Street. It's in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought some horses and raised some sheep.
Mm-hmm. I knew you had sheep.
Brother Richard runs a small greenhouse and garden.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then Brother Clarence boards a couple of horses and sells some hay up there, and then Sister Barbara on the end, where Ruggles and Chestnut come together, she boards some horses.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So
you keep your hands in.
Yeah, it keeps the land open, too.
Yes, you see that.
And we mow it and keep it open,
Because I love to ride, I drive down Chestnut Street and I like to do that.
I've got to do
that.
A little clearing on mine so people can look down off into the meadow. There.
Yes, will you please take care of that? Well, I thank you very much,
Belle. I've had a nice time doing this.
Oh, good. That was something different than anything else we have. And it fills in, you know, there's a gray area.
Yeah, oh yes.
In the 20s and 30s. You can learn a great deal about it before the 1900s, and then when we get into the 60s and 70s. But this is really very, very good to have. I thank you.